So if he said Shonazu, right? So we said that in that particular case, the minute that the first day of Nissan comes, that's the end. That's the new year. So that he loses the lease at that point. It says Latino Lamando Omar, and he says, and this holds true even in accordance with opinion that we had earlier in the Maseches, in the Tractate, where it said Yom Echad B'Shana Choshev Shana. If you remember, we had the question about a Jewish king, right? And we said that if the king began his reign even in the last day of the month of Adar, right, the minute that the first day of Nisan came, so automatically it's already the beginning of a new year for him, right? So we had then the principle of Yom Echad B'Shana Choshev Shana, right? That one day in the year, it's as if it were the entire year. So he says, but even that authority would not agree that, let's say, rent a house on the 7th of Adar and then the 1st of Nisan. Why? Shanei Hochi says it's different over here. The Loitorach Inish, the Nigo Deso, the Latino Pasin Yom, he says, because nobody is going to even attempt to rent a house for less than 30 days. So that's the reason why he mentions the fact that if it was the first of Adar, but if it were later in Adar, then it would not apply, because nobody is going to do it anyway. They'd be out of their head to know that in 2 weeks they have to move. Yeah, whatever it may be, right? So they ask the next question, the Yom Tishrei, right? So why do you say that it's the month of Nisan, the first of Nisan? Why can't we say that it's the first of Tishrei when people begin renting, right? So he says, Tam ki agar inesh beiso lechu yumeis hakshamim agar. It says, when a person wants to rent a house, he wants to have shelter during the time that it's going to be raining. Now, when does the rainy season begin in Eretz Yisrael? Begins somewhere in October, it's a general rule, right? Shortly after, the Sukkot holidays, okay. And then it can rain off and on for various months, but even it might rain, according to Gemara in Tainus, even it might rain in the month of Nisan. But certainly through the month of Adar, you could have it. So in other words, a person who is going to rent a house, he wants shelter from rainy weather. Therefore, he'll begin the year in Nisan to know that during the entire 12 months, he'll have shelter from rain, okay? So, the Tana Kama de Varaisa, the Tana Didon, right? The Nisan Nami Mishka Shechiyah Kitre. Because they say that, even in the month of Nisan, you could still find heavy clouds. That's how Rashi understands the word kitrei, right? You still find heavy clouds, which might cause an occasional rain. I do have to tell you that rain in the month of Nisan is not usual in Eretz Yisrael, but nevertheless, it is possible. It is possible, right? And the Gemara discussed this when we learned the first chapter of Tainus. Okay. Yes.
I don't want to.
It's all right. Don't worry.
Is that the first day of Tishrei?
Yeah.
And the rainstorm begins after Shmini Atzeret.
Yeah.
If you're worried, you're also going to be dry.
When Shmini Atzeret, you got to go stay home. You take your people across the street to get back.
All right. I understand your question. But, they are interested more in the difference between the fact that Shona Zu as compared to Lishona. If it's Lishona, it wouldn't make any difference when you rent it, because you have 12 months and you count it, But if you say Shona Zu, the Tana, in other words, the teacher of this particular Baraisa, so he feels that the month of Nisan is the time, when a new year begins. That's all. It represents his point of view.
Okay, I understand that.
Yeah. All right. Oh, yeah. What is today?
September 22nd.
September 22nd today. 1999. Okay. Yay, yay. Yeah. And we are almost at the festival of Sukkot. And at any rate, right now we're on Rosh Hashanah. let's see, Zion Amilgo. Yeah, we're on Zion Amid Beis. Okay, Zion Amid Beis. All right. So, we begin right now where it says, Be'echo Be'elul Rosh Hashanah L'maisa Behema. All right, the first day of Elul is the Rosh Hashanah as far as the tithing of Behemoths are concerned. Okay? And let's go back to the original Mishnah, the very first one that started the whole discussion. We see again that over there they're talking about that there are four, right? Arba Rosh Hashanah Ne'em, right? There are four New Years.
Yeah.
The first one we discussed was the first day of Nisan, which, as we said, was Rosh Hashanah as far as Malachim is concerned, right? Which we said means, you know, as far as the reign of a Jewish king is concerned. Although the Machlekes still is going to be reviewed again a little later as to whether it also could apply to a Goyish king or not.
Yeah.
And then it says for Dir Golim and for the festivals. And how do we determine the business with the festivals? The answer is, remember, there was a question asked a couple of dapim back about Lamay Hilkasa. What halacha do you get from that? It's nice to say that Pesach is the first festival. Right, because after all, it's mentioned first in the Torah, and so, you know, Achodich Hazelahim Rosh Chodoshim, etc., etc. And therefore, that being the case, then Pesach is the first of the pilgrimage festivals, and Shavuos is the second, right? And Sukkot is the third. But the question and answer, that is the answer to the question, is Amai Hilchasor, what was the halacha that we derive from this? The answer is that is as far as if you make a pledge, right, then at what particular point do you become guilty of violating the time that you have given to you for the fulfillment of the pledge, the fulfillment of the vow that you made, okay? And the answer is that there were different opinions. One of them said, for example, simply Shmosh Regolim, right? Three of these festivals. That's one opinion. Another one, how said, was the opinion of Rabbi Meir, for example. He said that if you even let one regal, one festival go by, you're already guilty of Balta.
Right.
You violated the fact that you should pay your debts on time.
Yeah.
You pay your pledges on time. To pay some English, bring your korban, okay? Another opinion was that two would be enough. But we finally wound up with the opinion of Rabbi Shimon, who said that Sholosh Regalim is Kesidron. It means that it all depends at which point in the year you make your pledge, right? That if it has to be that Pesach has to precede Shavuos and Shavuos has to precede Sukkot, right? And let's say that you made the pledge before Shavuos, how many festivals do you have then in order to fulfill it? So we saw that in that case you have four, or five rather, right? You have Shavuos and Sukkot, and then again Pesach, and Shavuos and Sukkot. So you have five. If you made it before Sukkot, then in that case you have four. And that was the majority opinion of the sages. So we learned that. All right.
But
now,
at least three had to pass.
Correct. In any case, I mean, three is going to pass. I mean, if you made it before Pesach, then you only have, you know, when the next Pesach comes and you haven't fulfilled it, then in that case you're guilty about that. Okay? All right. Then the Mishnah continued with a couple of more words. It said, Be'echod be'elul, on the first day of Elul, is Rosh Hashanah l'maaser behema. Right? This is the Rosh Hashanah as far as the tithing of beasts are concerned, and we've discussed that several times already. Remember again, we said that when animals are born in a particular year, then every tenth animal should be actually brought to Yerushalayim and eaten by the owner. But that's called Masa Behema, okay?
Right.
And the way they determined this, that they ran them through, you know, a pen with a narrow exit, and they marked with every tenth one was marked with a red dye, okay? So they knew that
like
this
Jacob
was
did.
Right. Yeah. And but that was contested again by Rabbi Elozer and Rabbi Shimon, right? Omrim, they said, no, it's not the first of Elul, but it is the Echod B'Tishrei. It's the first day of Tishrei. Of course, the Mishnah continued then with other things, but this is what is our text for right now, okay? All right, so the first question that they ask over here, do you see it?
Yeah,
all right, money is the first word of the Gemara, right? Money. They want to know, who is it? What do you mean, who is it?
Money.
The answer is,
money,
who is the money, author? Yeah. According to whose money, view yeah. is the first day of Elul, the Rosh Hashanah for Behemoth, okay? So they come up with the answer, and they say, Rabbi Meir. It's Rabbi Meir's opinion. Why? Ditnan, because we learned in the Mishnah, it happens to be a Mishnah in Choros, where it says, Rabbi Meir, Omer, he says, B'yechod b'yelul, the first day of Elul is Rosh Hashanah, L'maisa Behema. Okay? And also he says, well, near Golem. No, and he also says, L'maisa Behema, period. Yeah. The trouble is that there's no punctuation up here. And then, of course, the next word that we had in the Mishnah was, Valir Golem, that what? That the first day of what? The answer is, I mean, the first day of Nisan, remember, right?
Yeah.
Would be the Rosh Hashanah as far as festivals are concerned, we said. So, Mani, whose opinion is that? So they say, Rabbi Shimon, he. That's Rabbi Shimon's opinion. As proved by the fact that, what did he say? He said, as we said before, that if you make your pledge, you have to have this whole cycle of Pesach, Shavuos, and Sukkos before you are guilty of Baal Ta'achir, and if it's at any time, you know, in between. So he said it might be maybe four regolim or it might be five regolim. So he is the author of that, and therefore, the regolim, that represents his opinion. All right. Now, the Mishnah then continued, and it said, Amos Sefer, as the Mishnah continued, it says, Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Shimon, Omer, remember that they disputed Rabbi Meir's opinion, according to this, by saying that when is the Rosh Hashanah for the tithing of beasts, of cattle? It's Be'echad B'Tishrei, right?
The first of Tishrei.
Right, it's the first of Tishrei. So in that case, in analyzing this text, we say, Reisha V'Sefer, that the earlier part, in other words, when deals with Regolim, right? And Sefer, the later, when it deals with Maaser Behema, this represents Rabbi Shimon's point of view, because we said with Maaser Behema that he and Rabbi Elazar are in agreement that it's the first of Tishrei, right? Tziyasa, but the opinion of the middle part of the Mishnah, where it says that the first day of Elul is the Rosh Hashanah for Maaser Behema, who's that? That's Rabbi Meir, right?
So
Rabbi
Meir.
So now we have a problem, you know, because here we have different authorities. Authority A, Rabbi Shimon, he's quoted with one word, right? Rabbi Meir comes along and he's quoted for something else. And then comes again Rabbi Shimon, he's quoted for something else. So obviously, it's not quite a smooth understanding of the Mishnah. So I'm a Rabbi Yosef. So Rabbi Yosef comes with a different opinion. He says, Rabbi, he says, actually, the reason why we have the wording the way it is because this was the opinion of Rabbi Yehuda Anasi, who, remember, was the head of the yeshiva in Yavne, when they reviewed all these oral teachings, and finally they decided upon what they would accept as being the authoritative text of the Mishnah, and whatever they decided in Yavne was not the authoritative version of the various traditions, and in that case that was not included in the Mishnah. So we've seen, of course, loads of authoritative statements were made in Baraisis, but, you know, those statements are not official Mishnah. Tosefta is not official Mishnah, okay? They're not official, okay? Not official. But the official Mishnah text, you know, that was done under the leadership, under the redaction of Rabbi Yehuda Anasi, who simply is always referred to as Rebbe.
All right. Mishnah, right? The text
right.
of Mishnah.
Yeah. The Nasiv law, and he allowed or he followed the fact, in other words, he formulated it really is the way we should translate Nasiv over here. Aliba de Tanoi, okay? According to various Tanaitic opinions, according to other, you know, according to various teachers' opinions who were there. So as a result, sort of, if you wish, it's a little like a hybrid, right? But Birigolim, when it came to the fact that, you know, at what point do you become guilty of Balta Acher? In other words, when do you violate if you don't go through? Good evening, Bob. Come on in and join us, right? So Rabbi Shimon. So in that particular case, he felt that Rabbi Shimon's opinion was the right one, okay? Uber Maisa Behema. And when it came to what is the Rosh Hashanah for Maisa Behema, you know, for the tithing of the cattle. So Valoka Rabbi Meir. Then he is of the opinion that Rabbi Meir had the right opinion, namely that it should be the first of Elo. So now they raise a new question. Interesting question. They say, Ihochi, if that's the case, Arba, why does the Mishnah say that there are four Rosh Hashanahs? Chamisha Haba. It should say that there are five Rosh Hashanahs. Now, upon what would that be based? This is the question. All right? So, we review the text, go back again to the original Mishnah, and we see the Mishnah says that there are four Rosh Hashanahs, right? And what are they by name? Well, let's see. First of all, the first day of Tisha, right? Good. So far, so good. Then the next one they mention is the one in dispute, namely, is it the first of Elul or is it the first day of Tishrei? Then definitely the first of Tishrei is Rosh Hashanah, right? And then there's another dispute, and that is when do we say is the Rosh Hashanah Leilonot, right, for the Rosh Hashanah for the trees? And there again we find that Beis Shammai says it's the first day of the month of Shvat, whereas what? Whereas we find that Beis Hillel says no, it's the not the first but the 15th day of Shvat. This is what we call Chamishos Bishvat, or more modern Hebrew, Tu Bishvat. Okay, so in any case, we've already mentioned several of them. However, the first problem that we have is why does it say that the first day of Tishrei is Rosh Hashanah for Regalim, for festivals? Actually, what is the first festival? We said it's Pesach. Does Pesach occur on the first day of the month of Nisan? Of course not. When is it? 15th. The 15th, exactly. Always is the 15th. So that, therefore, if that's the case, this is now what he's arguing, right? And he says, why does it say four? We should say that there are five. First day of Tishrei would be good for what? It's a Rosh Hashanah for Melachim, correct? For kings. 15th day of, first day of Nisan, right? 15th day of Nisan should be listed as a Rosh Hashanah for what? For a Golem, right? So far we have two of them. Then, the next one, either the first of Elul or the first of Tishrei, right? And we have another one, namely, you know, the first of Tishrei definitely by itself, independent of whether we hold the opinion about Matzah Behema, because the first, the first of Tishrei is the Rosh Hashanah, as far as the creation of the world is concerned, and when we stand before the Rebbeinu Shel Olam, you know, for judgment and so on, okay? So in its own right, it's also a Rosh Hashanah. It doesn't necessarily depend upon the Behemoth, you understand? And finally, the question is, you know, and how about when is the Rosh Hashanah for trees? So, okay, take your pick. Either you follow Beis Shammai, who says the first, or the other one, you know, Beis Hillel, who says it's the 15th. But in any case, we've now come up with a count of at least five of them, right? So how can the Mishnah say four if there are at least five different Rosh Hashanahs that we've already enumerated, okay? So, this is the problem that we have. So, Amar Rava, so Rava comes up with the following explanation. He says, Arba Ledivrei HaKol. He says, in reality, if we analyze it, we see that in any case, no matter which authority we choose, there are only four Rosh Hashanahs. How come? The Rabbi Meir Arba O. Yeah, like Rabbi Meir would also say that there are only four. Why? Dal Regolim says, if you take out the fact that the first of Nisan is the Rosh Hashanah for festivals, take it out, then in that particular case, you're left with four, namely, first of Elul, first of Tishrei, right? And, you know, first of Nisan, and finally, depending upon the point of view, as to when the trees have their birth. Okay? All right. So, of course, we can say, as Rashi points out, why does Rabbi Meir hold this opinion? Because in his opinion, the halacha that we said before, that why does the Mishnah say regalim, right, for festivals, it's not to teach us that Pesach comes before Shavuos and Shavuos before Sukkot, that we know. We don't need that. What we needed is that, you know, those who don't hold Rabbi Meir's opinion say that this tells us, you know, when, at which point you're going to be guilty of Baal Ta'achar, right? Okay. That you have not fulfilled the pledge that you made. Well, says Rabbi Meir, I have the opinion that even if any festival comes along and you haven't fulfilled it, then you're already guilty of Baal Ta'achar. Don't wait. Do it as fast as you possibly can, and don't let even a festival come by in which you haven't fulfilled the pledge that you made. Okay. So, and how about Rabbi Shimon? So he says the Rabbi Shimon also is only arbo, only four. Why? He says, in his case, Dal Masa Behema, right? Take out the first of Elul, because he holds that when is the Rosh Hashanah for Masa Behema? It is the first day of Tishrei, right? So he doesn't hold at all from the first day of Elul as being a Rosh Hashanah. So in that case, again, we're left with exactly four. First of Nisan, right? First of Tishrei, you have to say that the first of Tishrei serves a double one. It's also the first one of, for judgment, and it's also the first one for Masa Behem. All right, so it does double duty. Or, if you wish, he might hold a different opinion. He might hold the following opinion. That, okay, first of Nisan is for what? For kings. 15th of Nisan is for what? Festivals, right? Mm-hmm. And then the first of Tishrei is for, whatever it takes care of. In other words, Masa Behema, in his opinion, as well as, you know, the creation of the world. And finally, of course, the date in Shavat, he probably would agree, you know, with Beis Hillel, that it's the 15th of Shavat. Okay. So in any case, how many Rosh Hashanahs is he left with? Four. All right. Rav Nachman bar Yitzchak amar arba chadoshim uvahen kama Rosh Hashanah. He comes with a novel idea. He says, when the Mishnah says that there are four Rosh Hashanahs, right, in reality the stress is not upon a particular date, but it is rather upon what? It's upon a particular month. In other words, which months would be affected? Nisan would be affected, right? Tishrei would be affected, Shavuot would be affected, and possibly Elul would be affected, possibly. And it all depends upon which opinion he holds in this particular case, right? But he says the important thing is the months. In other words, there are four different months in the year in which it is possible to celebrate a Rosh Hashanah, but as a matter of fact, he says, but you can have even more than that, because he says the Wahin, right, and in them is Kama Rosh Hashanah. Rosh Hashanah, you can have more Rosh Hashanahs, and we'll come to that in a little while. The next statement, Meisman, they ask the following question upon what we've been discussing so far. Okay. Mm-hmm. What is the question? They say that Shisha also bin Nisan, the 16th day in Nisan is Rosh Hashanah Omer. Alright? Is the Rosh Hashanah as far as the Omer is concerned. Alright, so remember, what is the Omer? The Omer is the fact that, you know, they would bring a measure of barley to the Beis HaMikdash, and they would cut it on the second night of Pesach, and then bring it to the Beis HaMikdash the following day, right? Offer it up, and after that offering, people would be permitted to eat chadash. In other words, would be permitted to eat the new grain, because prior to that date,
the new grain that had grown could not be eaten until the Omer had been brought to the Beis HaMikdash as a sacrifice of Thanksgiving. Understand?
Mm-hmm.
So, that's also a Rosh Hashanah, he says. Not only that, Shisha B'Sivan, the sixth day of Sivan, of course that's the festival of Shavuos, right? So he says that's a Rosh Hashanah L'Shtei HaLechem. That is a Rosh Hashanah as far as the fact that they would bring two loaves of bread, and it happened to be, normally the bread would be matzah, but in this case happens to be chometz, okay? But they would bring two loaves of bread as an offering to the Beis HaMikdash, and at that particular point, from that point on, what was permitted is to use new grain in the Beis HaMikdash. In other words, from the period between Pesach and Shavuos, while people were allowed to eat already the new grain, but in the Beis HaMikdash they still continued to use the old one until the 6th of Sivan. Alright, so now we have two more Rosh Hashanahs that are mentioned, right? Okay. So, L'Rava, in that case, L'Shnei Shisha. So why don't we say then, alright, so let's learn that there are not four Rosh Hashanahs, but instead how many Rosh Hashanahs are there?
Six.
Alright, going up. L'Rav Nachman by Yitzchak.
Every day is Rosh Hashanah.
Yeah, for him, he says, L'Shnei Chamisha. He says, okay, as far as, I wouldn't say six, but he says, I'll say
five.
Okay.
You can settle for five.
Okay. Why? Because, if you remember, he said that count the months, he says, I mean, the months are the important ones, all right. But if that's the case, since we have Nisan mentioned, we have Tishrei mentioned, we have Shvat mentioned, and now we also mention what? Sivan, right?
Yeah.
And then, yeah, we have to mention either Elul or something like that. But at any rate, his count comes up to five. Okay. So, it's obvious that at this particular point, when the Mishnah stresses that there are four Rosh Hashanahs, and others counter with the fact that there are other Rosh Hashanahs too by tradition, so it's getting a little bit too complicated, okay? Right. So, Omer Rav Papa comes along and says, Ki kochoshev midei dechayel miyuta. Midei deloi chayel miyuta lo kochoshev. In other words, when our sages sudden to reckon which are the Rosh Hashanahs, right, we're concerned with those Rosh Hashanahs that begin in the evening. As for example, when is the first day Rosh Hashanah? Begins at night, right? Okay, so then that's our Rosh Hashanah, he says. And likewise, you know, other events in the calendar, okay, that the night is the beginning. However, Mirei Delo Chayel Miyuta, if it's a matter which does not take effect in the evening, but instead when does the first take effect? It will first take effect during the following day. So, like a Choshev, he didn't even bother to enumerate them. Okay? Now, in that particular case, what is he answering? He's answering the fact that all of a sudden, you know, we mentioned, for example, the second day of Pesach, right, the 16th day of Nisan, in other words, which we said is a Rosh Hashanah for the Omer. Yeah, but when was the Omer brought? When did it take effect? In other words, when was a person permitted to eat the new grain? Could he eat grain as soon as the first day of Pesach passed and the night of the 16th? The answer is no, because it had not yet been brought to the Beis HaMikdash.
So what did they use in the meantime for the Beis HaMikdash? Between
they used old grain.
Huh?
Old grain.
They were allowed to use old grain.
Yeah, sure. That's exactly the point. You know, the Machlokes exist to this very day. So, I have to tell you, this controversy about Chodosh and Yashan exists to this very day.
Mm-hmm.
There are many people who are very observant about the fact that they will not eat anything made with new grain, new flour, you understand?
Sure.
Until at least the actually... Huh? No. but not before the 17th of the month of Nisan.
Oh.
Why not the 16th? Because we no longer have a Beis HaMikdash.
Oh.
In the days of the Beis HaMikdash, they would bring the Korban early in the morning. The Kahanim was risen, as the Gemara says elsewhere, right? That they were very alert. They wanted to carry out the mitzvah just as fast as they possibly could. They didn't want to delay it. So that people knew that, you know, as soon as the morning came, they would bring it, and then after that, you know, they would be permitted to eat. We don't have a Beis HaMikdash. We don't have the Hakrovas Omer, right? It's not being brought anymore because we don't have the Beis HaMikdash. So we have to wait one more day. So therefore, if you are a person who observes the fact not to use chodosh, new grain, flour made of new grain, then in that particular case, you couldn't begin using that flour until the third day of Pesach. Okay? So what do you eat prior to that? The answer is you eat yoshin. And so therefore, I can tell you right now that there is one person, for example, in Monsi, if I'm not making a mistake, he inspects all the flour milling and so on and so forth to find out whether it is old grain or new grain. And that affects the main grain grown in America, in his opinion. Okay? I mean, we might think, you know, that it only applies to Eretz Israel, I mean, in general, because the agricultural rules, you know, the primarily they are, as we would say, to Liam Baris, you know, that they are dependent upon the land of Eretz Israel. Right. Yeah. So, that being the case, the answer is no. So he wants to know what about winter wheat, summer wheat, and things like that, you know. You know that there is such a thing.
Good.
Right. So he makes up a list of all these different things, and he says, and in New York, as well as, of course, in Eretz Yisrael, you know, you can find bakeries that will feature a sign that say, you know, that we use yoshin. We're using old grain, old flour, okay? Because, you know, in this particular case, old is good. Okay. As I say, after the 17th of Nisan, after the 17th of Nisan, then they can begin using the new grain as well, okay? All right, so the point that we're making over here is that since that can only be done during the day, and not the, it has nothing to do with the night before, even though I told you that, you know, the actual carrying out of the Omer ceremony back in the old days is when the Kohanim started the night. As soon as the first day of Pesach was over, they'd go down and they'd cut wheat, you see. And they would bring it to the Beis HaMikdash. They made sure that they you know, they ran it through one sifter after another sifter and so forth, you know, in order to make sure that there was finest quality and so on, no imperfections. And then, on, you know, in the morning of the 16th, that's when they would be marked. But because it didn't take effect at night, so, therefore, that is not counted as a Rosh Hashanah, according to this opinion.
Okay.
Now, the same thing is true as far as, you know, the sixth day of the Sivan, for the same reason that the two loaves were brought, of course, during the day. They were not brought at night, right? And so, therefore, the Beis HaMikdash never used the new grain
Till
the following day. Okay, so that's the idea. Okay, so it's not being the case. That's why it was not counted, he said. Midi d'lechayo miyuto, whatever did not take effect the previous evening, then loikachosh, we didn't mention. So now they say the harei regolim. All right, that's a very nice argument, they say, but how about the fact that, you know, we said that regolim, right? The pilgrimage festivals, why is it mentioned over there? What is the halacha? Because it affects when you become guilty of Baal Tachar. All right?
Baal Tachar.
Now, question is, when does that take effect? When does that take effect? Remember that we cannot bring a sacrifice in the Beis HaMikdash, any private sacrifice. And remember that we were talking, you know, among other things, that people promised to bring. Would be, let's say, the Dorim and the Dovis, which would be, you know, that I offer to bring this as an offering to the Beis HaMikdash, right? So they were not allowed to begin sacrificing in the Beis HaMikdash until when? Until the morning Tomid Shel Shachar, was offered up. Remember that there were two daily sacrifices on behalf of Klal Yisrael, entire people, right?
Every day.
Everybody, and everybody contributed, you know, the Machzis HaShekel money in order to enable the treasury to buy behemoths for that, right? So, that being the case, nothing can precede the morning Tomid, the morning, daily sacrifice, and then only after that could they begin to bring other sacrifices as well. So, that being the case, if he made an offering, he made a vow that he's going to bring an animal, that couldn't take effect until what? Until the morning of the festival, right? Couldn't bring it prior to that.
But
at which particular point is his failure to observe his vow going into effect? So according to this opinion, the minute that the evening comes and you haven't yet fulfilled your vow, remember we said, all right, so they give you not the first festival necessarily, not Lord David's opinion, right, or not the other opinion that says two festivals, but the third festival. All right. Now, if it has to be Pesach, Shavuos, and Sukkot in that particular order, okay? What happens when the first day of Pesach rolls around next year and you still haven't brought your sacrifice? Then at what point do you become guilty about the Acher? The answer is Pesach night, the night of Pesach. Because you haven't brought it yet. And you had a new year in order to bring it and you didn't bring it all that time. You understand?
Yeah.
So that therefore, he's asking this question, right? Right? The phase, the case of sacrifice that you vowed, and they don't take effect, at night. Because Choshev, and nevertheless he mentioned them, right? It's listed as a Rosh Hashanah, Regolim, right? So he says, Kevin Shetzorach Lisuye Miyikora Mechayim. Inasmuch as he has the obligation to begin with to bring it, right? Then he becomes guilty if he has not fulfilled it at all during the given time that he had in order to do it. Chayav Akai. Okay. So now they bring in a new question. Hare Yovlos. All right. Now how about the Jubilee years? Okay. Remember, with the Jubilee year, it's written in the Torah that the 50th year, right? You want to count, it says, first of all, seven cycles of 7 years, right? Sheva Shabosos, the Mimos, the Yenor, it has to be seven complete years, Sheva Shanim, and so on and so forth, right? And after you count the cycle of Sheva Shanim, Sheva Piyomim, 7 years, seven times around, which in other words comes to 49, right? Then the 50th year is the year of Jubilee. Okay. So now the question is, and of course, we learned that there are certain things that take effect during Jubilee year. As for example, if, let's say, you had purchased a field, then in that case, what happens in Jubilee year? The field goes back to the original family that owned it. Exactly, okay? Goes back. If you bought a house, now that would depend upon whether it was a walled city or an unwalled city. How long do you have, So the answer is, if it was in an unwalled city, then it's the same thing as if it were in an open field. In other words, it would go back to the original household. If you had a slave, a Jewish slave, right? And let's say he had not served you yet for the 6 years that he's required to serve you, correct? Or even if he were that cook who said, Master, I love you so much that I want to be your slave forever, and then in that case, remember, we learned, right, he has to put an awl through him, through his ear, and so on. But nevertheless, when the Yovel would come, that's it. It canceled out
all
these things. Okay. So, question is, at what point does it take effect? Now, Gemara says that Rosh Hashanah, right, the first day of Tishrei is for Yovelos. So in other words, it should take effect on Rosh Hashanah. Yet what does the Torah say? The Torah says that on Yom Kippur, the Yom HaKippurim, Tavir Shofar B'chol Arzachem, right, you are to blow the shofar throughout the land,
give the message, right? And then across the Roborz and Chodesh Veho, right? You know, to proclaim freedom throughout the land unto all the inhabitants thereof and so on and so forth. But that is what day? Yom Kippur. So, of course, the question is, how could it be Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur at the same time? You understand?
Yeah.
Right, so, when does it take effect? So, this is what he wants to know at this particular point.
Is this with you all? Is this canceled by the Yom?
No.
I said, if a person said he wanted to be a slave forever to his master, but nevertheless, when the Jubilee year came, he was set free.
No, but if he was indentured. Jubilee done the year didn't set him free.
No, they did.
It did.
Yes.
He
became null and void if the Jubilee year came. Right. So even though he said he wanted to be a slave forever, he's automatically set free at that particular point. Right. Yeah. It says, and he's to serve him forever, right? But, if you'll take a look at Rashi, the other commentators say, until the Yovel, okay? Mm-hmm. The Yovel, even he goes free, okay?
Doesn't matter how long he's been working.
Could seem that way to him. He's always working, right?
Rashi's the only one that touches that way, right?
No, it's based upon the Gemara. So the Gemara in Kedushin, for example, deals with the problem of an Eved Ivri and so on. Okay? Deals with that. All right. So, let us continue right now.
All right.
So now the question is, So we mentioned already Yovels, okay?
Yeah.
Not affected night. Yeah. It doesn't happen the first night of Rosh Hashanah, right? Nevertheless, the Mishnah mentions the fact that the first of Tishrei is a Rosh Hashanah for declaring the Yovel, right? So, therefore, Rabbi Shmuel ben Osha, Rabbi Yochanan ben Broko, he says this represents the opinion of Rabbi Shmuel, the son of Rabbi Yochanan ben Broko, the Omar, who said that what happens in the Jubilee year. So he says, Me Rosh Hashanah, Taka, beginning with Rosh Hashanah, Chayo Yovel. The Jubilee takes effect. Okay?
These are opinions.
It takes effect then. Right. This is opinion. Rav Shisha Bereda Ravidi Yomar, he says to him, he says, He Kochoshev Midi de Le Toli Bemaise, but Midi de Toli Bemaise Le Kochoshev. Okay. He says, when they're mentioning things, Rosh Hashanah, they're talking about things in which automatically it's going to happen at that time without any particular action taking place. But if a certain action is required, then in that case it is not listed. Now, what he's trying to imply, in my opinion, is that, okay, Taka and Rosh Hashanah, they're not going to blow the shofar of Jubilee year, because the Torah says it has to be done on Yom Kippur, right? So there's no Maisa involved on Rosh Hashanah. But nevertheless, Jubilee year takes place beginning automatically on Rosh Hashanah. Okay?
There's no Maisa.
In other words, there's no actual deed like blowing the shofar involved on that particular. This is opinion. I do have to tell you right now, the Gemara, not over here, but elsewhere, you know, it discusses, granted that the Torah says on Yom Kippur, right?
Yeah.
And granted also that the opinion over here in the Mishnah is that when is Jubilee year automatically come into effect? On Rosh Hashanah, right? So, what do they do? So the answer is, everybody, including all the slaves are free, but they stay around in the master's house. They essen, they trinken, right? They have a good time, and so on and so forth. They don't do any work, whatever, and so on. And then, when Yom Kippur comes and they blow the shofar, at that particular point, you know, they can collect their compensation
goodbye,
from that
Charlie.
Point on, and goodbye to the master, okay? I mean, remember, we learned in another passage, you know, that even a slave, you know, if he works for you for 6 years, then in that case, what happens in the seventh year? In the seventh year, right? You not only set them free, but also there's also the business of hanek tanek, which means that you have to also give them a good severance pay as well. You have to give them a good settlement, you know, because after all, he did work for you during this time, and so he deserves the severance.
Taki didn't pay him any salary during that time, but does it mean therefore you put him out on the street? No. You have to take good care of him.
The shofar is blown also on Rosh Hashanah, but it doesn't mean the same thing.
No, not, so
that's,
not,
that's,
not,
that's not for Jubilee.
Not
it's
at all.
Blown, huh?
Not at all on Rosh Hashanah. I mean, just
you still blow the shofar on Rosh Hashanah because it's required.
But not for the Jubilee.
But not for the Jubilee year.
Jubilee
right. Correct, correct. Okay.
The key at the end of the service is the
yeah, well, to a certain extent, I mean, it's like a reminder. I mean, remember, it's really a minhag, it's not a din.
Yeah.
But it's a reminder of the fact that, you know, like in ancient days, in Jubilee year, when they would blow the shofar.
We don't observe Jubilee year now anymore.
No, we don't know. First of all, I don't know. Some people think that they've made an accurate count, you know, and they could tell you exactly what the cycles are and so on. They're more careful, I have to tell you, in Eretz Israel about the seventh year, but not about Jubilee year. Because that, again, the Gemara in Kedushin says, you know, that the people of Israel have to be in complete control of their land.
Yeah.
Understand? Not being subservient to Clinton and his gang and so on and so forth. State Department, and the Jews have to be really independent, and then you can begin to have a yoga. But as long as Jews do not have complete independence of their own land, then the word, the institution Yedel, doesn't take effect. Okay? Right.
Gemara,
because, you know, it's obvious it created tremendous difficulties, too. Okay?
Sure.
But even...